Okay, Baruch Hashem, nice turnout. So this is the time of year that we start getting ready to go home and preparing for Pesach, and there's a lot of preparations to do, of course. When you get home, you have to, you know, assuming that you're going home, to offer to help. It's a lot of heavy lifting and shopping and errands that should be on your front burner, not leaving it to other people. But one of the things that you should also be coming home with is well prepared for the Seder. And Seder night is a beautiful time, and I don't know every single Talmud's the tzura of your Seder. I'm sure every one of you is different. I'm sure mine is different than every one of yours. And, you know, you have to basically go with whatever it is. If you're, you know, if there's a father or somebody else leading the Seder, a grandfather maybe, or an uncle that's leading the Seder, and he wants to give over his Torah to people around the table, that's probably l'chatchila. That's really the way it should be. V'gadta l'vincha. The mitzvah is to let the father teach the children. Unfortunately, in our dar, very often that's not possible. Sometimes, or very often, the child is far more knowledgeable than the parent is. And so sometimes it's left to you to be, if not leading the Seder, at least contributing significantly. So what I want to do tonight is to just take like a few of my favorite Veret Lecha Mehagadah. It doesn't have to be your favorites, but it's definitely something if you want to take notes or you want to just, we'll record it, we'll put it up on the podcast. If you want to, you know, just have these things in your back pocket or your front pocket to say at the Seder, I think it's kedai. Okay, let's start with Halach Ma'anya. Halach Ma'anya is really like the first time after Kiddush and you know, Karpas, that you start Magid. And Halach Ma'anya has the invitation, strangely, called Ditzruch Yesav Yifsach, called Duchvin Yesav Yechel. Whoever comes, whoever is hungry should come and eat. Whoever needs should come and join us in a Karban Pesach. You know, there's a million questions on this, what this means. Like, you're inviting people after you already are sitting by your Seder table, Yashkayach. That's not really, that's not really so such a great time. You should make this announcement maybe in Shul. I think Rabbi Yisrael Salanter used to joke that he says, I've heard many times people screaming out of the window of the Shul, Minyan, Minyan. But I've never heard somebody screaming out of the window of their home, you know, Kiddush, Kiddush. People don't. People are generally less inclined to invite people, and more inclined to use people for your religious, needs. But here, the Haggadah is basically starting and framing the Seder as a night that it's very important to invite guests into the home, and of course it should really be thought of before the Seder. It's always makes the Seder a lot more interesting when you have interesting people around the Seder, guests, eclectic guests, people that are from, you know, different walks of life, different levels of religiosity, and they come together. And the beautiful part about the Seder is that you're really able, if it's being done right, to connect all of the spheres of Klal Yisrael through the story of the Seder, and everyone could get into it on their level, and even the biggest novice beginner could ask questions as much as anyone else, and if they're, you know, good questions, then they definitely deserve an answer, and they are equal participants in the Seder. I remember when I was a child, we had one Seder, we invited a certain woman to the Seder, and she was like a National Geographic's like expert in the Eser Makas, meaning she just came to the table just ready with all her kfira and minos about what each of the Eser Makas means, you know, not, you know, from a natural standpoint, and, you know, all of this kfira. And my father was very, Olav Shalom was, you know, he took the Seder extremely seriously. It was very European, very straight, and it was, the smoke was coming out of his ears. He was like containing himself, then she would go out and have a cigarette in the middle and come back reeking of smoke. It was not such a, you know, geschmacka experience, but barring, you know, people that have an agenda, if people are coming into the Seder that really with an open mind and an open heart, and they want to be makabel the Messiah of the Amuna, this is a wonderful time to do it. So I just wanted to bring a quote, actually bring it in my new Haggadah. By the way, just as a little bit of a plug, I the people from Arts Girl told me tonight that it's almost sold out. They printed way too few of them, which a lot of them, but it was, I, you know, they should have done at least double, and it's only like, you still have 2 weeks before the Seder, and it's already like 75%, more than 75% sold out. So I don't even have enough of them myself, but if you were interested in buying it, I would suggest to do it quicker, sooner than later. But
we text Nima?
Now everybody wants one, right? talk to me afterwards. The line should start. I'm joking. So Rav Huttner used to say a beautiful quote. Rav Huttner used to say that some people invite guests for Yontif, others make it Yontif when they invite guests. Isn't that a beautiful quote? Some people invite guests for Yontifs. A lot of people, you know, you have guests for Yontif. Other people, whenever they have guests, they make it a Yontif. It's Yontif Dick when you have a guest. You know, there's different ways of sometimes you have a guest just because, again, it's like one of your religious needs. It's a box to check, but you really have no interest in having them at your table. You don't give them the ability to feel like a human being. They feel like a guest, and they feel like a, you know, like you're, that, you know, you're giving them out of the goodness of your heart. Rav Huttner is basically saying that that's not the right approach. The right approach is to make it Yontif Dik when you have a guest. Not just, okay, I invited guests for Yontif because that's the halacha, but rather to make it a Yontif when you have guests and to try to make the guests feel good about themselves, make them feel at home. And that's really a, you know, very, very important part of the Seder experience, but really of every Shabbos and Yontif table. The great Rosh Yeshiva of Mendel Kaplan, who was a Rosh Yeshiva in Skokie, and then he was Rosh Yeshiva in Philadelphia. So he was a very big tzaddik. If you want to read more about him, Art Scroll has a book called Rav Mendel and His Wisdom, beautiful book. And he was, there's so many great stories about him, but one story that I heard, I think Rebbe Yisvei, the Rosh Yeshiva of Philadelphia, used to say it over very often, if not every year, by his Ne'ilo Drasha, was that he used to invite to his house, not just on Seder night, but around the year, he would invite poor, not just poor people, homeless people. He would literally find Jewish homeless people on the street and bring them, invite them warmly into his house to eat Friday night, Shabbos day, cholent, whatever it was, and he had many such guests, and needless to say, they did not exactly smell of cologne and fresh roses. They reeked because they were homeless people, and they probably had not bathed or taken a, you know, had a change of clothing for a long, long time, and his daughter, Mendel Kaplan's daughter, she was a normal girl like you and I, like, and she had, you know, she like once told her father with all due respect, you know, Tati, I know that you're a big tzaddik, but I have to be very honest with you, I can't stand the smell, just can't. I mean, it's not. I know that you're a tzaddik, but maybe I'm not, and you know, I want to also like have a Shabbos table. I want to be able to eat my cholent without having to gag, without having to, you know, and I just can't. I'm sorry, I can't. Like, Laman Hashem. So he said to her, he says, I understand what you're saying 1,000%, 1,000,000%. He says, but just before we stop this minig to invite guests, I want you to just take something into consideration. And that is that we're going to go up to Shamayim someday. And probably there's a good chance that Tashem, we reek. With all the Averis that we've done in our life, with all the Lashon Hara that we've spoken, all the Shemir Seinayim issues, with all the Hirhurim, with all of the business shtick, whatever we did in our life, we don't probably smell too good either on a spiritual plane. And my hope is that maybe because we are inviting these guests into our home and we're not throwing them out and we're embracing them, the hope is that maybe someday HaKadosh Baruch Hu will embrace us as well, regardless of our smell. I don't know what exactly the daughter responded to that. That's not brought in any books that I saw, but this is something that is a very powerful vart. And again, Rabbi Yisrael used to repeat this by Ne'ila, Rosh Yeshiva Philadelphia. But it just goes to show that, you know, we don't always, the guests that we do have in our house don't always have to be the Shainster Yidden, like the finest Jews. Sometimes we think Chlasas Archa means okay, I'll invite the boys, I'll invite, you know, people that don't really, the people that don't need invitations. It might be technically Achnas Zarchim, not so sure, but like those aren't, you know, inviting your, you know, the cool guys, you know, that's not, you know, that's fine, but that's not the real mitzvah Achnas Zarchim, and specifically Seder Night. There's so many people out there that really could use a place to eat, a place to experience Seder properly with the mitzvah halayla, the matzah and the mar and the charesis and all the experience that and it only enhances our own Seder if we have people like that in our midst. And to that, the Haggadah is saying at the beginning of the Seder that kol dich v'nyes v'yech, whoever is hungry, please come in and accept our invitation. We need you. We want you. You are enhancing. So maybe it's like it's already too late to invite new guests, but maybe the guests that are there, if it's done in the right way, could be made to feel comfortable, and we're inviting them again, like even though they're at our table, but like we're happy that you're here. We welcome you into our home, and we hope that you have a beautiful yontif. Okay, that's one yesod right out of the gate. Another one is we'll skip past Manishtana. There's the piece that speaks about Mitchila Avdei Avodah Zarah, jumping a little bit ahead in the Haggadah. The pasuk starts speaking about how we started being Avdei Avodah Zarah, and it gives a lot of spotlight for some reason to Terach Avi Avram, Avi Nachar. It's like giving the whole yichus of Avram Avinu. It's not really such great yichus. Avram Avinu's father was Terach. He was an idol worshiper, and he wasn't such a, you know, picture perfect father. He wanted Avram Avinu to be thrown into the Kivshon HaEishin or Kastim. He snitched on his own son to, and Avram Avinu almost was killed on Kiddush Hashem. Baruch Hashem, a miracle happened, and because of that, we're all here today. But for some reason, we're speaking a lot about Terach Avi Avram. And I got a call this year, just a week ago maybe, from okay, maybe it was more than a week ago. From Rabbi Gelli. The one night I get a good vibe. Okay, so I got a call from Rabbi Gelli. Rabbi Gelli is, what are you going to do? Oh, that's a good start. So Rabbi Gelli's father was one of the Rabbonim in the Breuer's community in Washington Heights. After Rav Schwab, really concurrently with Rav Schwab, Rav Gelli became the Rav. He's a big paisik, a very eloquent speaker. He's from England. And he was nifter, I would say, a good 10 years ago. I might be wrong. But he was a very, very distinguished Rav. I knew him a little bit personally. But his son is one of the teachers in my girls' high school. And so I got close to him, and he bought a Haggadah, and he liked it. And then he called me, and he said, he told me Ara that his father used to say, similar to what I bring in the Haggadah, but a different knetch about it. And I think it's a beautiful var, and I think it's very essential that Avraham Avinu, if you think about it, Avraham Avinu could have really, if he had been very human and very fragile, he would have been, been very easily forgiven to just throw his hands up and say, I'm a loser, I'm a failure. I mean, my father wanted to kill me. My father was an Avid Avodah Zarah. He's one of the biggest salespeople of Avodah Zarah in the world. He tried to kill... Avraham Avinu had every right to just throw in the towel and say, that's it, I'm done. I mean, I have such a bad past. Look where I come from, and I'm just doomed to fail because, it's impossible to succeed after with my roots and where I came from, my background, forget it. Avraham Avinu, even though he was Avram, he was Terach Avi Avram, he was the son of Terach, and he had every excuse in the world to say, there's no way in the world I will ever succeed. I'm certainly not going to be able to spread monotheism in the world because, look where I came from. I have such a bad start in my life. But the lesson that Avraham Avinu teaches us is so powerful to every single one of us. We all come from Avraham Avinu, which means that we have in our DNA all of the stuff that Avraham Avinu had. And Avraham Avinu said emphatically that I will not have that attitude in my life. I will not look at my father and my surroundings and my upbringing and all of the history that I have and say, therefore, I am obviously doomed to fail. Therefore, I am not going to be able to succeed because look where I come from. And he pushed forward, and because of that, we're all here today. He established monotheism in the world. He was able to spread la'alafim l'ravavos to thousands and tens of thousands, the Rambam says. The fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu alone is the creator and runs the world. And he was the progenitor of the Avis of Klal Yisrael, and we're all here because of him. And take that into your personal life, because so many of you and myself are all obsessed with where we come from. I went to this high school, and I did this when I was in Eretz Yisrael, and I'm so and I did that last night, and I'm like I'm looking at me. I'm nothing. So because I'm nothing, I'm not never going to amount to anything. So I might as well throw in the towel and just do Yiddish and just be and just not even try. But Avraham Avinu teaches us that that's absolutely the wrong attitude in life. The right attitude in life is like, so what? Who cares where I came from? And I know that it's oversimplifying. I know that a lot of times people have a lot of issues with their background or with Rabbeim or with siblings and things, and it complicates their life and it brings them down and it's a nightmare. I get it. I totally get it. And I'm not trying to say this is a substitute for therapy and it's a substitute for, that would be a gross oversimplification. I would never be guilty of that. But there is, even with whatever people are going through, there is always that understanding that you should never feel that your situation is so dark and so dim and so doomed because of things that happened to you or because of your family situation or because of your particular background or your history. It doesn't matter. It matters, but it doesn't unless you decide that it matters. If you could be like Avraham Avinu a little bit and we could, decide that I'm starting my new yichus from today, that would enable us to be able to really be amazing, amazing, super amazing people. Super amazing people. The greatest people that we have in Klal Yisrael very often came from horrible backgrounds, if you noticed. Horrible. You look at the Imais, from Besuel and from Lavan and from, you can't get worse, situations than the Imais. And then with, and then, then the Vechule throughout history, Esther, you know, was an orphan from her father, from her mother. There are so many reasons why every one of the great personalities should have said, it's not for me, it's not, you know, it's not Shaykh for me, it's for other people. But the lesson, says Rav Gelli, of Terach Avi Avram, why we give it so much prominence in the Haggadah, is to teach us this lesson that you could choose if you want to blame, you know, whoever you want in your, for your past, but that's just going to doom you even further. And the better way to do it would be to just try as hard as you can and just look, don't look in the rearview mirror so much, and just continue to look forward. Okay. If we skip a little further in the Haggadah, don't get fooled, it's going to start again. It says in the Haggadah, Vihisha Amda is like very often like the most dramatic part of the Seder in many homes. I know, you know, in my family Seder when my father was alive, so he used to always at this point in the Seder like recount his own personal salvation from death's grip. That Hakadosh Baruch Hu matzilenu miyadam. Miyadam means that even when we're literally in the hands, this is how many of the Yesh Kodesh, the Piyazetzna, and also Rav Pam, they both are aimed on this matzilenu miyadam. Sometimes you're literally in the enemy's hands, like they have you in your hand, in their hands, and you're completely, you know, at their mercy, and Hakadosh Baruch Hu could extract you from even the worst situations and get you free. And get you free. So my father used to talk about his own personal story, which is, it's an amazing story. I mean, it's literally the craziest story in the world. You know, during the Holocaust was like, the whole world was like, went mad. The whole world went mad. Every country in Europe, in you know, primarily in Eastern Europe, but also in Western Europe, in Germany and other, Austria, you know, the Nazis came to power, and they were it was a war machine, and they were just like taking over country after country. And when and Hitler's obsession was to kill the Jews, as much as he wanted world domination and, you know, playing a, you know, big real game of Risk, he was really trying to kill the Jews. And in fact, if he hadn't been so obsessed with killing the Jews and he had just, you know, worked on his war strategy a little better, he could have literally conquered the world. The world was pretty much his for the asking. But he used like very valuable trains and trucks and ammunition and gases and to exterminate. He was in such a rush to destroy the Jews that he literally lost the war. Because of that, people were, his own staff was saying, leave the Jews for the time being, just take over the world, and then you'll have all the Jews. And then you can do whatever you want with them. But he was so, you know, obsessed, like a laser, to kill the Jews as fast as possible, that he lost the war. It was all Hashgacha Elyona, obviously. But the whole world went mad. The whole world, you know, minus a few countries, went mad. And, you know, and they were all, you know, many of them were in cahoots with the Nazis. It wasn't like just the Germans. It was Lithuanians were terrible, and the Poles, and they were helping the Nazis round up the Jews. And the world was a very dark place, obviously. There was one, maybe two, lights in the whole dark world that was Europe at the time. And one of them was in a country called Denmark. Denmark is a little country in Scandinavia. Scandinavia is like a group of Norway, Sweden, and Denmark. And they're very nice people there. I went there once with my father when I was in high school, I think it was. And the nicest people in the world. Like today it went Arab, like the Muslims, you know, because they're very liberal there, they invited all the Muslims in, and now it's very anti-Semitic today, and it's very... But then it was like just nice blonde-haired, blue-eyed people that were just like, you know, they just didn't see it. Like they just wanted to have peace and be nice people. And so Sweden was a neutral country. Denmark was not, but Germany was very, Hitler was very nice to Denmark for a long time because they needed Denmark for their milk and for, you know, to supply a lot of material for the war effort. So the Danish Jews were able to sort of just live normally. My father's family lived in Denmark. Well, the truth is that my father's side came from Würzburg, Germany, which is where my great-grandfather was the famous Würzburger Rav. But when the war started breaking, when Nazis came to power in Germany, and my uncle, Olav Shalom, who died just recently during COVID, they were like calling him Dirty Jew all of a sudden in Germany. And he came home and told my grandmother was from Denmark, she told my grandfather, she said, like, you know, let's see the handwriting on the wall, we have to get out of here. She said, and if you don't want to come with me, then you stay here. I don't care, but I'm taking the kids and we're going to Denmark. And so they went, and it was a very, very smart move. And long story short, the Nazis finally came in 1943, which is very late in the war. And when they came in, they were supposed to come in the night of Rosh Hashanah and round up the 6,000 or so Jews in Copenhagen, which was really where the main Jewish community was in Denmark, and take them to the concentration camps, to Theresienstadt. Somebody found out a little beforehand, and Erev Rosh Hashanah, they came and told the Rav of the Shul, Rabbi Melchior, who was the chief rabbi of Denmark, told him that, you know, the Nazis are planning on coming around. They tell the Jews no one should come to Shul tonight, Rosh Hashanah, because they're going to be dead, if they're going to all be taken. And they should go into hiding, and we're going to the Danish underground, which were really Gayim. The Danish Gayim were unbelievable. They were mamish meiser nefesh, literally, to save the Jewish community in Denmark. And so my grandmother was in their home, and she was like cutting up vegetables for Rosh Hashanah. The table was set beautifully, and they were in their ancestral home. Like, they had like a big apartment building in downtown Copenhagen, where they had a shul in the building, and they had a lot of apartments. They had storefronts that they rented out. It was like a few hundred years in the family. And then the Nazis came, and they went into hiding. A few days later, like right before Yom Kippur, they were taken in the fishing boats. If you ever go to any Holocaust museum, generally there you'll see a fishing boat. Those are, you know, either real ones or replicas of the fishing boats that the Gaisha Danish fishermen used to ferry across the water from Denmark to neutral Sweden, the Jews in Denmark. And most of them, Kimat all of them got out alive. Kimat all the Jews, save a few elderly and people that just were sick, they were sent to Theresienstadt. But everyone else stayed in Sweden throughout the duration of the war. Before my grandfather had left Denmark, he had a friend who was the chief of police in Copenhagen, and he said, do me a favor, you know, I have a lot of valuable svarim in the house, and Sifrei Torah, and, you know, and money, silver, whatever. Do me a favor, put a seal on the front door of the house, so that said, by the order of Danish police, no one's allowed to enter. And I don't know why the Nazis would care about that, you know, but anyway, he did it. And then after the war was over, a couple of years later, 1945, like 1.5, 2 years later, they came back, and they didn't know what to expect to see. First of all, the Danish guy were waiting by the docks, openly embracing, waiting for the Jews to come back. One thing like to push them, to help them out, but at least that you get them out of their country. But to accept them back is a very big, it shows how, you know, chashuv they were as a people. And sure enough, the seal was still on the door, and they went in, and the table was still set for Rosh Hashanah, and there was like a jungle in the kitchen of vegetation from all of the vegetables that my grandmother was cutting up for the meal. So my father used to tell over this story at, you know, every Pesach by this point in the Seder, and it's a very big yisayid that, you know, literally, like, you know, it's just fascinating for me as a, you know, to understand that the Nisim that happened in Denmark directly impacted me and my siblings, my parents, my family. You know, it's like, if not for that, we wouldn't be here today. It's an amazing thing. But you know, that's the point of the Haggadah, that you recognize that you know, and today, unfortunately, you know, we're going through this again. I don't think we ever, when we said Vishamda, it was ever like as real as it is this year, as it will be this year. If you're, you know, if you're in touch with what's going on in the Seder and what's going on in the world, Vishamda laveseinu v'lana HaKadosh Baruch Hu stood for us and our forefathers. Shalai echa bilvad amalein l'chalaseinu, not just one, many, many, many Gayim in every generation, b'chol dar v'dar, they tried to destroy us in every generation. And even when we were in the grasp of the enemy, when the Nazis thought that they were about to chop the Jews, it was easy. It was just a layup. HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved us. It was mamish a nes. It was a nes nigla. And unfortunately, millions of people did not have those nisim, but we still have today, you know, so many survivors, you know, not alive, but children of survivors and grandchildren, and I reckon most of the people in this room, you know, have, you know, a story to tell, or their grandparents have stories to tell about how they were somehow saved at different points in their lives. And this is the repeating lesson of Jewish history, that as we should never feel overly secure in any country that we are in Galus, not to give us nightmares, and not to say that we should have this paranoia about everywhere we go. We should feel normal. But we see today that, you know, as the Gayim around the world, in America and in Israel and in France and in England and in and pretty much all the countries around the world today, including America, especially America, it seems sometimes, the mask is off and the anti-Semitism is so apparent, it's so obvious, like they're not even hiding it. We had a free pass or a sort of free pass for many decades since the Holocaust, and now the world, it became in vogue to be anti-Semitic. If you're not anti-Semitic today, you're not cool, literally. Every college campus, the cool people on campus are waving Palestinian flags. I don't know what they have with Hamas. I don't know why they would advocate, you know, terrorists that rape and kill and burn babies. But for some reason, that's the reality today. It doesn't make sense. But if we think it doesn't make sense, what do you think our grandparents thought about in Europe? Like, what did we do wrong? We were such good people. We were good doctors and lawyers and senators and governors. And, you know, they were very powerful people in Germany and in Europe, Western Europe, Eastern Europe, all over the world. What did we do wrong? Like, we were great citizens. We paid money, we paid taxes, and we built hospitals. And we the same like we're doing here. But it doesn't matter. That's not the point. The point is that there is a sinna that the Gayim have against Klal Yisrael. Not all Gayim, I said in Denmark was an exception, but very, by and large, there are many, many, many enemies that we have, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we have to daven, we have to hope that HaKadosh Baruch Hu matzleinu miyadim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will, just like he has done in the past, hopefully this too shall pass, and we will once again be able to have a little bit of relief in this galus and feel that maybe things aren't as bad as they seem today, but we don't know where it's going. But one thing we do know is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised us, there's a haftacha, there's a bris between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will always save us and we will never be fully destroyed. And we see that play out throughout history with all the great empires that rose and fell, and there's no Romans around anymore, and there's no Greeks around, there's no you know, all these great empires are really no longer, but the Yid remains, and we're there are not too many of us, but still we're way beyond our numbers. We're, you know, we're very a little country called Israel. It's a little mamish. It's the size of New Jersey, a little dot on the map, not even a dot, and the whole world is obsessed about us for some reason. It's crazy. I mean, I'm sure you get these memes also, these WhatsApp things, you know, about how in Rwanda, you know, millions of people were killed. There's not a single UN resolution against that. And in Turkey and in Afghanistan, whatever, hundreds of thousands of people killed and la'adam, nobody's talking about it. Israel, you know, has a war, a self-defense war because of what happened on Simchas Torah. And the whole world is obsessed. They're like going crazy. There's protests on in the London Bridge and in Paris and in America, and for what? What do we do? We're defending ourselves. We're trying to get after our. No, you're not allowed to do that. The Jew is not allowed to protect themselves. The Jew is definitely not allowed to win. And you have to basically be, you know, be just a you know, like a sheep going to the slaughter, or else we don't like you. Or that's the way it feels today, and this is something that we have to think about. And because when we think about it and we understand the reality, even though it might be a little frightening, but it gives us a greater appreciation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's kindness and how HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves us and He cares about us and He's protecting us. And on Lel Shimurim, the night of protection, it really behooves us to give that a lot of thought. I know it's late. Just want to end with one final thought, that it's sort of like a new thing. I don't know how old it is, but I started adopting it at my Seder a couple of years ago. At the point of the Seder of Vanitzak El Hashem, that they cry to Hashem, there is some sort of makar, and maybe you could look it up and find the earliest makar. Lately it became more popular. But there's a skula that at the point of Anitzak El Hashem, you could daven and you could cry to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for things that you need, personally, nationally, and that's what I do. I stop the Seder, and we have, you know, Baruch Hashem, generally speaking, a nice amount of guests, and you know, I said, let's just take a pause here, and just, like, it's a special time, and we could, like, ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu for what we need right now. And there's it seems to be Baduk Umanusa that if you could ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu at that point of the Seder for things, and you know, I'm not getting into the halachic ramifications of making bakashas on Shabbos and Yanta, but anyway, this is how it's brought, and you know, just to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, for Rachmei Shamayim, and to be able to bring the Geula Mashiach. We need him so badly. We need a Geula Bichlal, and we need Geula Bifrat. There's a lot of things that Klal Yisrael needs right now. And the older you get, you know that Merubim Tzarchei Amcha, that there's so many necessities that our people need. You know, the Shidduch crisis, you know, that's a term that's bandied about. But if you stop and think, there are so many, there are thousands probably, of single girls and single boys, but you know, but really more single girls. I think boys have it a lot easier. They get more shidduchim. They get more. They're more in demand than girls are. Even though these girls are wonderful girls, they're accomplished and they're, like, you know, they're from and they're fine and they're. But there's a lot of girls, you know, tonight that are just waiting by the phone, waiting for a shadchan to call, and they're not calling. And they're getting older, and they're getting more desperate, and they're getting sadder, and it's a terrible, terrible magefa. It's if you don't know about it, so Baruch Hashem. But if you know about it, you know, if you have somebody that you know that's old, and I'm sure we all know many people that are older, it's a very difficult situation for the girl and for the parents, and it's very hard on the Amunah system. It's very hard on, you know, the whole I bought into the system. I sent my kids to the finest schools, the finest Beis Yaakovs and seminary in Israel, and she's in school and she did this and that. I did everything right. Why am I not getting any shadchanim to call? And this is not money thing. Like, wealthy people are also have the same issue. It's not always money. It's not always, could be the most wonderful girls, the wonderful families. There's just simply, whatever the reason is, maybe there's not enough guys to go around, or the guys aren't going out as early as, whatever it is, but there's a crisis. And that's something that, as Yidden, we have to be very concerned about, even if it's not a personal thing. But you have to, Vanitzak El Hashem, at that point in the Seder, you close your eyes and you say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there's a lot of girls out there tonight that are not such good situations, and boys, single boys, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please be Mezavik Zivugim. There's a lot of people in the hospitals all over, you know, any hospital. It seems like there's a disproportionate amount of Jews. If you visit hospitals in New York, at least, you know, you see Hasidim, maybe because they stand out and you recognize them more. I don't know, but, you know, I had a relative that was in the hospital. I was at Shabbos a couple of months ago, I think it was. There's a lot of Jews in hospitals. And there's a lot of sick children, and there's a lot of sick grown-ups and people in our own yeshiva with parents with with severe issues, and siblings with severe issues, and you know, for that we have to daven for. And then there are people, there's hostages as we speak, that are literally in dungeons and tunnels, and who knows what's being done to them, who knows where they are, who knows what they're... Can you imagine being a 6 months in a dungeon, in a tunnel, with Chayas Rais around you, and at their whim, and they're doing who knows what, Rechmanu Litzlan, and, you know, they went through Hanukkah alone, and they went through Purim alone, and they're going to, you know, hopefully they won't go through Pesach alone, but... you know, and the families, what they're going through. Imagine if you'd have a parent or a brother or a grandparent and us, or a baby. How would we think? But there are relatives. And at the point of the Seir Divan Nitzak, we have to, like, take stock of our situation. Hopefully our situation is perfect. If our situation is perfect, then we have to first and foremost thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because it's a night of Haidah. Thank you for putting me in my situation where I am. And thank you for giving me, you know, everything that I need, etc., etc. But... if, you know, if there are tzaras in your family, then you should be more acutely, you know, able to daven and to cry maybe at that point. And even if there aren't, you should be able to open your heart and see, you know, how much we need as a people and how much we need as yechidim. And as yechidim also, we have a lot of personal needs that we have. Maybe we need a shidduch, or we need you know, a parnasa, or clarity in what career we want to go to, whatever it is. It doesn't have to be, it can seem trivial relative to the things that I was just talking about, but if it's a need, it's a need. And at the point of a nitzak, there are makairis that, you know, just to stop and to think and to appreciate. I'll just end with one more of art from Rapinkas. Rapinkas says that we say that kashim mizaynes shel adam kekriyas yamsuf, that the mizaynes, making, you know, having parnasa, is as difficult as kriyas yamsuf. It's a nace as big, if not bigger, than kriyas yamsuf. The fact that we're able to have parnasa is not a simple thing, to have parnasa. You know, hopefully everyone's parents have parnasa berebach, and hopefully we'll all have parnasa, but it's not a simple thing at all. It's a tremendous bracha. I always, like, whenever I drive and I see, like, stores, you know, like, wherever it may be, you drive on a highway and you see, like, these random, a lighting store and a pizza store and a, you know, I don't know, like, some auto parts store, and, like, you think, wow, HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes a parnasa for each, like, there's Amazon today, you don't need to go into stores, but yet, all these stores seem to be making parnasa. HaKadosh Baruch Hu drives customers to every single person, hopefully, that needs it. It's a miracle. So Rav Pinkas just said a very simple vart that's very kedai to think about, and maybe say it over at your Seder, that just like by Kriyas Yamsuf, we sang Shira Tashem, every time that you open up a refrigerator and you see it fully stocked, you have to say, you have to sing shir, you should have a spontaneous outburst of song every time. If it's true that kashim is in Kriyas Yamsuf, the reaction to it should be the same. If Kriyas Yamsuf I sang, I should be getting up and dancing. You know, my wife was she's a speech therapist, and she used to do home care in Queens. She went from house to house. Now she works in a school, but she used to go and work from house to house, and she told me that there are from people in Queens, I'm not talking about in Ethiopia, I'm talking about in Queens, literally a quarter of a mile from Yeshiva, she would go in and the kitchen was bare. She opened up the fridge or whatever, I don't know, she was standing by the way, and there was nothing in the fridge. Imagine opening up a fridge and there's nothing in it. Can you imagine such a thing? There's no, you know, there's nothing. There's no ketchup, there's no pickles, there's no pizza, there's no burgers, there's nothing. It's empty. So my wife is you know, she used to, like, before she went, she would bring, like, a, you know, like a rye bread, a sliced rye bread, and some milk and some you know, some orange juice and stuff, and stock the fridge a little bit. But this is not, this is local. It's a very local thing. She doesn't work there anymore, but I don't know if the problems got better. And when we have the ability to open up, we go home, and we're able to open up the fridge, and we see it's packed for Yantiv, it's full of food, you can't, like, barely close the door. So that should inspire us to sing Shevach and Haidah. Never take that for granted. Never, ever take it for granted. We are so lucky. I don't want to say the word spoiled, but we're so lucky. You know, we have, how much pizza comes into this building? How much pizza on an average day, literally? Would you say 25 pies on an average? Maybe that's, I'm sorry, 50? Literally, I mean, it's if the gods at Torah would know how much pizza comes in this building, I'm telling you, they would shut us down. We have no idea. Like, we have so much baravchas, you have fresh bagels every morning, and you have every type of cereal, and then lunch you have this, you know, whoever's on the meal plan, you have bakol mikol kol, and then at supper, I think tonight I ate supper here, and it was the first time I ate here, I think, in years, as whatever, but, you know, supper, it's mamish, we have such ravchas here, such ravchas. We have electricity, we have heat, we have air conditioning, we have, you know, we are so lucky. People, we are the envy of the world. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving it to us. The only cost for us, besides for the cost of tuition, is thank you. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, thank you. And if we're just marching through our life and we never stop and take stock of how lucky we are, then Rachman Litzan, HaKadosh Baruch Hu say, listen, if they don't appreciate it, I'll give it somewhere else. That's fine. We don't want that. We want to be able to say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, thank you. The Sefer HaChinuch writes that if you bench, and the Mishnah brings this, if you bench with kavana, and what is benching? Benching is really saying to Hashem, thank you for the food. He says it's a skula that you will always have mazin berevach. We always want to eat. We always want to make sure that our family is well fed and nourished, and wherever we are, we'll be able to afford, you know, square meals and good food. And we want that. What's the skula? What's the skula? To wear a reita bendel, like a red band around it, that's a skula? No, bench. You just bench with kavana, because if you bench with kavana, you're showing HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I get it. Thank you. I know that it's not so pashut. I don't take it for granted, not for a second. And benching, how do we bench? We bench like when we bench like mamish, like, like, we're like, right? Is that how we bench? I'm not everybody. Maybe just me. But, you know, we bench with like mamish a quarter of our brain. Halavai. We bench with mamish, like, you know, we're already like halfway out the door as we're finishing benching, and that's an avla. It's not right. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the food. He it's a nes like Kriyas Yamsuf, and we don't sing shir. We're basically just, if we remember to bench, it's like a shvacha benching. So that's another very important yisayit of Seder night, a legacy, if you will, a takeaway from Seder night, is that we should have hakaras atayv HaKadosh Baruch Hu for everything that he gives us, our life, our freedom, our liberties, our fact that we're in such a great country and we don't have to have bombs falling on our head, Baruch Hashem, and we don't have to have sleepless nights, and we don't know, like, you know, Baruch Hashem, we're very fortunate. We have food, berevach. We don't have humanitarian aid trucks coming in and like worrying. We have, Baruch Hashem, stocked supermarkets and stocked, we're lucky. We're lucky people, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu just expects a thank you. That's all. Hallel v'ayda, a little thank you, a little ayda to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's what the Seder is all about. It's basically just saying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, thank you. And then davening a little bit to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, v'anitzak. It's reminding ourselves, Terach Avi Avram, whatever my background is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm moving forward. I'm not looking back. I'm not going to let them ruin my life. I'm going forward, and I'm not going to let them haunt me anymore. I want to break free of the chains, of the shackles of my past, and just be happy who I am, and be strong, and go forward. That's the legacy of Avraham Avinu, and Halach Ma'anya. When we have guests sitting around the Seder table, don't make them feel like strangers. Don't make them feel awkward. Like, just embrace them. Make sure that you make them laugh, and bring them into the conversation, and make them feel wholesome and whole and good and warm, and just make them feel like kings and queens. And when you could do that, then we could walk away from the Pesach Seder. If we could chap these little sparks, then we will walk away from the Seder so much better people, reinforced with amunah, closer to the Rabbeinu Shleilam. And mitzvah Hashem, this should be a Pesach that we won't even be here. We'll be in Yerushalayim HaBenuya, and we'll be able to eat min hazvachim u min hapsachim, and we'll all be able to, mitzvah Hashem, sing and dance on the rooftops of Yerushalayim HaBenuya.
send the recording on WhatsApp? I just like having a
Hey, how do I get my